we get Arvina on for the next segment, I want to just play this clip from yesterday, and you know, bear with me because everyone that watches Native Roots Radio knows I'm a little technical dangerous. So let's see if I can play Lieutenant Governor speaking yesterday at the Minnesota Missing and Murdered Indigenous recognition and name and speaking out the names of the people that are missing. And let's take a listen to that before while we end up this segment. Let me make sure I can do this, because you know, there we go.
My name is Peggy Flanagan. My Ojibwe name is Speaks in a Loud and Clear Voice Woman. I'm a member of White Earth, and my family is the Wolf Clan. And I'm just humbled to be in this space in Chinning-Rich, Rachel, for getting this started in a good way. And wanted to acknowledge as well your good work, Guadalupe, and the creation of this country's first state-based missing and murdered Indigenous relatives office in the country. This office exists because of the incredible work of advocates, of family members, of individuals who refused to give up, and for folks who listened. And I want to specifically lift up Senator Mary Kunesh in this moment as well, who knew how incredibly important it was that our community members not have to continue to be re-traumatized in telling their stories, but to simply have people who are willing to listen and to enact policy in this office, which has much more work to do, but it matters. And it matters especially in this moment when there are folks who would prefer that we be invisible. There are folks who would prefer that we not talk about the statistics and the people that we have lost and those who have gone missing and people who have lost their lives. But we will not be silent. We will not go quietly into the night, because this work is required that we raise our voices and we ensure that this does not continue to happen to anyone's family or any individual. So thank you so much for being here today. And I have a proclamation that I would like to read. Whereas Indigenous people continue to experience the highest rates of murder and exploitation per capita in Minnesota's urban, rural, and reservation population, disappearing at alarming rates with very little public visibility for justice. This is a long-term and ongoing crisis impacting Indian country across the United States, and there is no comprehensive estimate for the number of Indigenous people who have been lost to violence since the beginning of colonization. More than 4 in 5 American Indian women have experienced violence in their lifetime, and more than half have experienced sexual violence. Although they make up just 1% of Minnesota's population, Indigenous women and girls account for 10% of the missing females in the state. Indigenous men and Two-Spirit relatives are also overrepresented in missing persons and homicide data. According to a 2020 study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, homicide was in the top 10 leading causes of death in the United States for American Indian males 1 to 54 years old, and American Indian males had the second highest rate of homicide compared with males in all other racial or ethnic groups. In the history of settler colonization and ongoing systemic racism, historical trauma, sexism, and sexual objectification of Indigenous relatives have increased the prevalence and impact of the underlying causes of violence, including poverty, homelessness, housing instability, justice involvement, food insecurity, mental health instability, and substance use disorders for Native Americans compared to non-Native Americans. Minnesota recognizes the sovereignty and role of the 11 sovereign tribal nations that share geography with Minnesota. Law enforcement and agencies at local, state, tribal, and federal levels, community-based organizations, and all advocates dedicated to ending this crisis. In 2019, the Minnesota legislature created the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Task Force, and in 2021, Minnesota established the Office for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives, dedicated to ending violence against Indigenous people in the state.
Having a proclamation from the governor and having Lieutenant Governor read that, it's an amazing thing here, and we are really proud to have this kind of political outreach here in the state of Minnesota right now. And again, I loved how they gave the shout out of the state senator Mary Kunish. So up next, we're going to have Arvina Martin and our political consultant. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands, and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today.
To the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way.
To those who carried on traditions and lived strong among their people.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Robert Pilot Days. Sorry about that phone call. A friend of mine was in an emergency, so he tried to get a hold of me and didn't realize I was live on the air like I've been the last 5 years. Hey, I hope he's doing okay. I'm texting him right now. We have our friend Arvina Martin on, our political consultant, and always great to see you, Arvina. I was playing a clip from the Lieutenant Governor and the Governor's Proclamation for MMIR, Indigenous Relatives Day, and I know all over Turtle Island people have been recognizing that, and it's been we heard the names yesterday at the Minneapolis American Indian Center, and it's always heartbreaking to hear that our relatives are gone and don't come back, and more than just one person's involved. There's families, there's relatives, and community that's really mourning all this when people disappear.
Yeah, we had an event here in Madison at the Capitol I think this was the sixth year in a row that it's happened, and it was put on by Rachel Fernandez, who is Menominee. She does a fabulous job. I was unable to attend this year because of meetings that I couldn't get around. But I saw the pictures, and it looked, very, there were definitely a lot of people there. There were a lot of Native people, but also a lot of non-Native folks. And I was very happy to see that the day was being acknowledged by lots of elected leaders across the state. I think that the sad part about needing a day like this is that these cases don't get much, if any, attention or publicity or even attention from law enforcement historically. And that leads to obviously inaction on the part of law enforcement agencies. There are potentially, folks that could have been helped had a search started right away, or if someone had been had their report taken seriously and not had somebody say, oh, she's just a runaway. Things like that. And I think what broke my heart the most is that today, I saw another post about another young woman here in Wisconsin, a young Oneida woman named Miranda Smith, who has not been heard from since Friday, May 1st. So, you know, for this is something that unfortunately happens every day. And I know I've mentioned the story before, but I was talking while in a meeting discussing the issue, and you know, I was telling a non-native friend who was also listening to the meeting about how my Facebook feed always has somebody who's looking for someone who is missing. Mm-hmm. And or a story about, you know, maybe a trial about somebody who did wrong to one of our relatives, and I showed him my screen, and I scrolled up and down, and I was like, look, and there were like four, you know, and this is something that he had never, heard. And this is somebody who is a, you know, an ally who shares, you know, news, who supports the causes and does things actively to help, you know, when he's been called upon or when he's seen things that need to be uplifted. And he was absolutely shocked that in just my Facebook feed, a couple of seconds of scrolling led to several posts about people looking for their lost relative. And I don't think that the public at large grasps how, you know, prevalent this problem is. You know, sometimes people are like, well, you know, we're a small population, so maybe the numbers aren't there necessarily. But when you look at the percentages, they're crazy. I mean, you know, it's homicide is roughly the third leading cause of death among Native women and girls between the ages of 10 to 24. Like, it's so heartbreaking that statistic goes down to that young age, and wow, that our girls as young as 10 have this risk, you know, associated towards their safety, to their lives, and so little is being done about it. And I think that we are at a point where Native women in particular, and hopefully more Native men, are getting sick of this, getting sick of these kinds of actions or being normalized or not addressed. And these, you know, a lot of actions from men within our communities, people that are our fathers, our brothers, our uncles, our sons, et cetera, you know, are harassing women online. And, you know, we had an event that was being scheduled in Madison to help raise awareness about MMIR. And it was canceled because several women came out and said, well, the organizer, this Native man, has been sending harassing messages to women online for a long time, and nobody said anything. And finally somebody said something, and this guy was organizing the event, and the event was canceled, which I think was a good idea, because, you know, you don't want to be supporting the efforts of somebody who's abusing our the women in our community, our women relatives. And you know, it's scary. And I really commend those women. And some people might not necessarily see the connection, but it is the lack of care for women and just being like, oh, whatever, you know, you're getting harassing messages online. Just, oh, they don't mean it. Oh, you know, maybe they're drunk and like they'll sober up and be okay. No. And I'm so proud of the women that have come out and named names. And, you know, a lot of them have been coming with receipts too. And you know, we need to see more of our male relatives doing this, and we need to see more of our male relatives speaking out about this, even if it's, you know, if it's something that it, that is somehow not escalate, it's not escalated to murder yet, but harassing and treating women with anything other than respect needs to stop, because that's contributing to a society that sees us as less than, and then, you know, that ends with violence towards us, and it ends with violence towards us a lot of times without anybody being punished for it.
Yeah, this is the second week we've talked about something similar to this, and I know, and I really appreciate you bringing it up, because I believe last week we were talking a little bit about a lot of the sexualized and BS talk by powwow masters over the years, and that goes down the same thing, you know, people, especially, and I appreciate you saying that, especially men really need to call this out. It's not always the woman's job to do this. And so I really appreciate you bringing this up, because this is something that needs to be talked about, and needs to be brought up, because this isn't okay. And you know, we know when we talk federally and talk about the government, you know, the orange one was ahead of beauty pageants. And it's the same thing where we see these pedophiles that are working in Hollywood that give acting lessons to young people. And it's a thing that needs to be talked about constantly. And I know the beginning of being Me Too'd and things like that was the start, but we still really need to talk about this.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm calling on all of our male relatives who are listening to this. If you hear this and it's being couched as jokes or locker room talk, and you know that these are things that somebody would never say in front of their mother, in front of their grandma or their aunties, you know, they shouldn't be saying it at all. So we need more men in those situations to call it out and say, that's not okay. You can't talk like that. Even if there are no women around, we just have to stop this, this line of thinking.
Absolutely. Let's talk more about it in the next segment. I'm here with Arvina Martin, our political consultant, and, this is something that, especially after yesterday's MMIR talk, we really need to talk about and laser in on it. Thank you so much, Arvina. We're going to be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
Programming is supported by St. Paul Guitar Repair. St. Paul Guitar Repair is a small local business that focuses on personal service for beginners as well as seasoned professionals. They have over 80 years of combined experience providing repairs, restorations, modifications, and construction of acoustic and electric fretted stringed instruments. They are located in St. Paul's West 7th neighborhood or online at stpaulguitarrepair.com.
Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hey, we're with our friend Arvina Martin, our political consultant out of Madison, and we talk about all politics and a lot of things here on Native Roots Radio. And, started off by talking about the missing and murdered Indigenous Relatives Day, but also the importance of calling out people. And I think we should finish this conversation because it's very important and people need to hear it. And maybe people are, don't have the proper thought process to do this. And I think it's something that we need to talk about because, as we know, politically here, nationally, if you're, going with somebody and you're not calling them out, you're complacent or compliant. And that's a thing we should talk about.
And this is not a new conversation. You're talking about the orange one and how he had a beauty pageant. It was a teen beauty pageant even that he would talk about going and looking, checking out what was happening behind the scenes and seeing participants in various stages of undress. He got caught on tape saying, grab them by the whatever. And that wasn't the end. That was not the end of him. And people were like, oh yeah, that's just the locker room talk. And I think it gave a lot, made people a lot more brave to be saying things like that and not expecting any repercussions. So we need to bring those repercussions back. Maybe they're just, when it comes to comments, they're just social ramifications or whatever. We need to bring shame back, for so many things. But this misogyny that has been bursting through the seams of our society, we need to look at this. We know that the manosphere is reaching out and is, getting to our young men and our boys. And they're seeing this example as, well, that's how you be masculine. That's mm-hmm. how you be a man. You make comments like this. You put yourself above women and you're dominant or things like that or your rightful place. And that's not right, Right. And this is, obviously far beyond Indian country, but our boys are having access to this as well. And we don't need that for our young men. We need our men relatives to be good examples for our young men and to be that kind of example of masculinity that, is not afraid to show emotions other than anger.
Yeah.
And that they have respect for the women in their lives and the women that are not in their lives. A woman does not deserve respect just because you know her. It needs to be across the board. Things like slut shaming happen all the time online. If you say something wrong on Facebook, someone comes out and calls you a slut.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens all the time and that shouldn't be normalized. I certainly don't want my teenage daughter going through things like this, but I'm sure that she has.
Right. Yeah. I agree. And, not to change the subject, but what I wanted to say is that, I've seen young ones treat their parents bad. And I will just say, I'm an elder and don't ever talk to your parents like that in front of me or ever. And it goes a long way, but especially with our women, because of really like what you've said, we want to make racists afraid again. You know, we want to make people afraid again, and they're not acting. And there's a lot of reasons. But again, I want to really just echo what you said originally, is that call people out.
Absolutely. And, you know, if they share this content online, you know, call them out and say something about it. You know, people talk about the male loneliness epidemic, but then the guys that are posting about it, their solution is to force women to marry them. It is not take a look inside at yourself and see why you are so abhorrent that no woman wants to interact with you. It's never a problem with them. It's always a problem with women writ large, you know, compulsory marriage or sexual acts, because these poor men can't get any companionship. You know, it's putting their problem on the backs of women again.
What was that lady's name that was like the home and garden lady, and then she ended up going to prison for insider trading? Martha Stewart.
Yeah.
And now it's a normal thing. She went to prison for that. And now look at what's going on the last 10 years with this inside trading. And it's going on daily.
Oh, yeah. By elected officials or folks, you know, rules, whether they are rules in law or rules that are like societal rules that are maybe unspoken or spoken, they don't seem to matter so much anymore. And that, you know, whether it is financial abuse, financial, you know, taking advantage of a situation in order to line one's pockets. I mean, that's what the entire Trump family is doing right now.
Yep.
You know, but you know, the sons have investments or own, you know, Bitcoin or like, right. I forgot what they're called.
They have drone companies too. And they have all these things. And hey, what about Hunter's emails or laptop?
Right. And Hillary's emails and Kamala's laugh. You know, these are all things. Those are things, again, that like, we need to create a word in the English language that describes the feeling of complete and utter shock about something that is happening or has happened, along with the complete lack of surprise that it did happen. Because so much of this stuff fits in that kind of bucket of feelings, for me at least. And I feel like the Japanese or the Germans probably do have a word for that. But we need to figure one out too, because it's still shocking to me that so many of these things are happening. But at the same time, you know, we are like, yep, that tracks. That's on brand.
Well,
and we need to get mad about it.
What about your teenage daughter that this last 10 years has been normalized? This has all been normalized tenfold with what's going on. And as a young person, I worry about them because they don't know that this is not normal.
And that's where we as parents and as adults in these young ones' lives have to come in and talk about it and say, this is not normal behavior. This is not how things have been, at least, you know, on the surface. There's always been the undercurrents of things like this, but it's never, ever been so blatant. You know, I don't remember this happening because it happened before I was born, but like they made Jimmy Carter sell his peanut farm, you know, because of the potentials for financial entanglements or something. And he did it, you know, a farm that had been in his family for generations. And Trump just said no, and everybody just let it go. And, you know, we need to make sure that our young ones know that this does not have to be the way it is. And we need them to fight with everything that they have to make sure I hate to say it, but pick up the mantle and fix the mistakes that, you know, folks in my generation and folks in earlier generations have made that have led us to this point. You know, there's a certain amount of greed and a certain amount of this, like this whole idea of individualism, and that, you know, you need to pull yourself up by the bootstraps and you need to achieve. And if you don't, it's your fault. Ignoring all of these systemic barriers that come to most people and completely forgetting that they have not accomplished anything without the help and support of others, whether it is their family, whether it is their educators, their teachers, whether it is the government, you know, providing free roads for a business owner to transport their goods on. This is, no one does it by themselves. And we need to go back to, you know, ways that are much more traditional to our community, and that we act or, you know, one of the values being that we need to act in a way that supports all of us, that it's not just us, that we are not supposed to be doing things for our own individual success, that this is something that we need to do to help each other out. Because, you know, when we all do better, we all do better, you know?
Right. Well, it's good Robert was tracking with you. We're getting a lot of responses on Facebook, YouTube, and all our social medias that we're on. Robert said we need to bring all the tribes together and bring back our traditional ways and live the Creator, the way the Creator intended us to live. And I think you were just saying that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we need to understand. I mean, unless you are living off the grid, weaving your own fabric, your own textiles, so, you know, creating your own clothing, growing your own food, you know, like, and even that, you know, that's not done just based off of your efforts. You know, there are things that are happening outside of you, whether it is photosynthesis, you know, you have no say over that, but it's not something you did.
Arbina. We're going to take a quick break.
Sorry, is Native Roots Radio. Getting a little heated.
No, we want you to be heated, but we also have to pay the bills. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio with Arvina Martin, our political consultant.
It's Dr. Evan Adams, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. Hey, Victor, you better be listening.
In this portion of the show, we'd like to bring awareness to our wolf and bear populations throughout Turtle Island. Say no to the hunts.
Oh! Hi.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are with our friend Arvina Martin, our political consultant directly out of Madison, Wisconsin. And we've been really talking about some heavy duty stuff. And I really, really appreciate the comments. There's a lot of comments, Arvina, that are are coming up on our comment section via YouTube, Facebook, and all the other places that we're at. So we really appreciate people chiming in and speaking their truth too, because this is something that, like Arvina said, has always been there, and now people seem emboldened to really do these things to our community and to our women and to our young ones. And so this is very important conversation, Arvina, and I'm really glad that it's gone this way. We have to keep our own backyard swept and cleaned, and our own side of the sidewalk cleaned and swept. And a discussion like this is powerful and needs to be addressed. So I appreciate this. And I know it's not easy for you too, Arvina.
Yeah. And I mean, it is hard. I mean, because we see it, because we live it every day. It makes you weary. And every time it happens again to whether it's you or whether it is, you know, somebody that you care about or you hear about on the news, you know, it's just devastating. And, you know, I also think that this is devastating for our male relatives, because there's something that's lacking, you know, that makes them feel that in order to be special, that they need to put somebody else down and they need to show exert their dominance or something over people they perceive to be less powerful and have, you know, and, you know, ultimately it's against folks who are more vulnerable than they are. And, yeah. You know, and I think it, a part of it is like what I mentioned before, is that, you know, we socialize our young men and our boys to, again, you know, suppress any kind of feelings that aren't anger. And therefore anger becomes the only emotion that it's acceptable to express publicly or to, you know, even privately to somebody that they care about. And we have to like make it so that we know, so that our boys know that it's okay to feel sad about things. And it's okay for them to show that. It's okay for them to cry. You know, that's part of a healthy, natural part of dealing with these emotions that are so hard on people. And you know, we need, you know, our boys need great mentors. They need people that see them. They need people that they can talk to talk through their feelings that might be difficult to discuss or even to articulate. You know, we don't all have the language to be able to describe the things that we're feeling. Some of us have been in therapy for a long time and have a better vocabulary when it comes to talking about emotions and how we handle them and how we process them. And having, you know, our boys having, whether it is, you know, circles with older men, you know, that are there to serve as mentors and to help them navigate, you know, that has got those kinds of things need to happen, because they need to see these examples in their lives. And it can't always be women that are doing this labor, because right. For a lot of people, we are not the appropriate message. They're not going to listen to us. They will listen to you though.
Right.
And so we need your help. Again, none of us do this by ourselves. I cannot knock out misogyny by myself. If I would, we would live in a completely different world. But you know, if you know a young man who needs guidance, you know, be that person or connect them with somebody who they will be able to connect, you know, like someone who resonates with them and that they can build a relationship to, because you know, not everybody has the same kind of role models or parents mm-hmm. in their lives to be able to serve in these roles, and sometimes people need folks outside of their their family or outside of their parents. And you know, we can help our boys and our young men grow into confident humans, and humans that have empathy for others and know to treat other people with respect, regardless if that's their mom or that's their daughter. You know, that everybody deserves to be treated with respect. And you know, I think men would be a lot less lonely. But I also think that, you know, when we have boys that are more emotionally healthy, that they grow into more emotionally healthy men, and emotionally healthy men are not the ones that are causing damage to the lives, health, and safety of women around them. And so this problem, you know, the cause is an issue within how our boys are growing up, and the result is it's taken out on our women and younger people as well, because, you know, it's they're vulnerable as well. And we all, men and women, need to be conscientious of that, and we need to pay attention to how we treat people in public, because that we are all examples for our young ones when they see us, you know, at gatherings or at the grocery store. And that's why our conversation last week about powwow MCs making unacceptable jokes at the extent of, or to the, you know, for against women, you know, that's normalized. And the kids hear people laughing, so they think that that's an okay joke to make. And we know that it's not.
Well, one of the organizations here in Minneapolis, and I got to give them a quick shout out, Many Shield Society is doing just that. And bringing men back to the circle. And I just wanted to give them a shout out, because sometimes inch by inch, it's a cinch, and yard by yard, it's hard. So we want to, you know, talk to those people and bring that up. Arvina, we only got like a short 30 seconds left. This has been an amazing conversation, and I really appreciate it. How can people get a hold of you?
Find me on LinkedIn. I'm there for any of your training, cultural or political training needs or conversation. You know, I appreciate you holding the space for us to have this conversation today. I was hoping that this would be kind of what we would be talking about. And I'm really grateful that you are one of the men putting this conversation out into, you know, the larger community.
Well, I appreciate you immensely, and what you do and what you do for our community. And definitely this is going to be out there as the best of this week. So again, Arvina, big peeny geeky, thank you so much.
They say all good things must come to an end. But at KFAI, we believe otherwise. Your vehicle, once a source of countless memories and adventures, can continue to create positive change long after its last drive. By donating your car, truck, boat, or RV to KFAI, you give it a new purpose and support the programming you love. To learn more about how you can extend the contribution of your vehicle's influence, call 855-277-2346 or visit kfai.careasy.org.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Quit Partner. Quitting smoking or vaping is easier said than done. Quit Partner offers Minnesotans no-cost resources to quit nicotine, including patches, gum and lozenges, coaching, and digital support. More at quitpartnermn.com.
Hi, it's Dr. Evan Adams, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. Hey, Victor, you better be listening.
In this portion of the show, we'd like to bring awareness to our wolf and bear populations throughout Turtle Island. Say no to the hunts.
Oh! Oh!
Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Native Roots Radio, and we're with Bob Blake, the Solar Bear, with the Solar News and Sports. Hey, one thing I'd like to segue, Bob. Joe Sensor passed away today, and that was kind of shocking because he's close to my age, and he was a great blocking field goals and punts and tight end that had a really good run and then got out early because of really some back issues, and he had some restaurants in town, and sad to see someone that young, 69 years old, go.
Wow. Joe Sensor was just a legend. And then he did a lot of philanthropy work here in the Twin Cities. I know that, you know, he, you know, his wife had that situation, you know, over there by Augsburg College over there on 94.
Yeah, kind of closed his businesses after that, too.
Yeah, closed his businesses after that, too. And that was, you know, obviously not Joe's fault. You know, that wasn't Joe's situation, but, you know, it was his wife. And so, yeah, but just an amazing human being. And I mean, the work, you know, and being a player on the Minnesota Vikings all those years and being a part of the, you know, the Purple. I mean, yeah, really sad to hear that, actually. He was a good guy, man. I really like Joe Sensor.
Yeah,
and not only that though, but just as a player too, you know. So, yeah, rest in peace, Joe. Number 81, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Definitely. Same as Carl Eller. You know, our Twins aren't doing well here, and I'm very sad. They lost today 7-5, and they've lost 15 out of 20. And the funny thing is they're starting pitching and hitting. We're doing pretty well. The relievers are really letting us down.
Well, I think they had, like, that one guy from the Mets, you know, it was like a week ago or something. He was picked up by the Mets. The Mets let him go. And he was like on their practice squad, and the Minnesota Twins sent him out there to, you know, basically hold on to a one run lead. I don't know if that was the guy that we needed, but anyways, you know, the Twins ended up losing the game. But point being though, is, we did, yeah, the bullpen is tough, man. The bullpen is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. I've heard from different people that say, you know, at tops, the Twins are a 75-80 win team on a good year. So I think, what they might want to do maybe is look, how are we going to do this next year? I know the poll ads are trying to figure this out too. You know, maybe we put up Buxton next year. I don't know, Robert. I hate to say that, but.
Well, you can spend money, and that's one thing they're not doing. They dumped 11 players last year and didn't get really much in return. We got a couple of young arms, and one of them's doing really well. But there is going to be a big lockout because these salaries have to really, you know, we're. Twins are salaries of $90 million, and we got baseball players out there making 50 a year. We can't compete with that.
I know. And you look at, you get a player like Ohtani, right? From the Dodgers. He makes $2 million a year. But what did he do? He deferred his contract until he is like 36 years old or something. I forget what that is. But then he gets like $68 million a year after that. Now, think about that, Robert. Your best player is deferring his contract for all those years because he wants the team to put money back into the team to bring in people so they can win championships. I mean, that's an interesting deal. And I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing more and more Ohtani deals happening around Major League Baseball.
Did you know that there's a day, I think it's sometime in July, it's called Bobby Bonilla Day, and he gets $3 million each day because he deferred his contract till I think another 20 years. He'll get $3 million a year.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Ohtani's doing, and I think you're going to see some other major leaguers do that exact same thing because they want to win now. So it used to be where you took the salary up front and you got paid up front. Well, now, that goes against the salary cap, And
well,
so
there is no salary cap. That's the problem.
Yeah.
That is the problem in Major League Baseball. And I think that's why there's going to be a lockout next year. And that's why the poll ads dumped everybody, because they want to save money and not pay people that have guaranteed contracts when they're locked out.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. And I'm telling you, Robert, this is a business, everyone. I hate to say that, man, because when I was a kid, I looked at the baseball players, Kirby Puckett, Ken Herbeck, all those guys winning the World Series. And I thought to myself, man, this is for the love of the game. And for a lot of those guys, it is for the love of the game. But, the owners have made it very clear that this is a business and that this is the way that, professional sports are going. And now you see it trickling down into college sports with that, NIA stuff. So,
crazy.
I don't know where this goes.
I don't either, but let me just cry on your shoulder here with the Wolves last night. We're really here at the home, always excited to watch playoff basketball, and I ended up switching it and watching Hacks on HBO.
Well, I tell you this, Robert, San Antonio Spurs came to play last night, and the Wolves, they have a really good team. The problem is that we're banged up, and you can't play in that type of level, especially in the NBA, when you have half your team is injured. So that's the reality of it. These guys get tired. They're going all out each play, and there's only so long that you can fake that. So the old saying, "Make it till you fake it," right? Or fake it till you make it.
Right.
And this is catching up with the Wolves here on this one. So, it's going to be interesting to see how they respond in game three. We have a good team. I think that we can play the Spurs and go toe-to-toe with them. But, the rest of the team's going to have to show up. And Anthony Edwards is just going to have to be healthy. I mean, that's just – it's hard. It's hard because he's hurt.
Yeah, definitely. And they got an unbelievable young center, I guess. He's a center. He was hitting three-pointers. He's only like 23 years old.
Yep, exactly. I mean, Chet Holmgren and these guys, I mean, that's what these NBA teams are looking for now, these big men that can shoot the ball, and the three-pointers, and, then they can post you up, they can pass. I mean, it's amazing what these seven-footers are doing nowadays.
Got 30 seconds. The Wild.
Yeah, the Minnesota Wild is going to play, I believe, on Saturday, right? And they are down 0-2. The Frost play tonight. They are 1-1 tied. And so let's go Frost.
Definitely. I'll have to go to your suite at the Frost game and check it out.
You're welcome anytime.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. Thanks, Bob Blake from Red Lake. If you're listening to the show, you're part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops to ground on which you stand on, it's sacred ground. It's the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office, vote, release those beagles, and also get some solar panels. This is Native Roots Radio signing off. See you tomorrow. Again for listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are the Halusa Nation. We have been called the Indians. We have been called Native American. We have been called hostile. We have been called pagan. We have been called militant. We have been called many names. We are the Halusa Nation. nation. We are the human beings. The callers of names cannot see us, but we can see them.
This is Miniculture on KFAI. You can't go very far in the Twin Cities without running into an iconic mural. Since the 90s, street art has been a mainstay within the metro area, finally earning its due in the Lynn Lake Street Art Series, which held its first edition last year. This year's edition is set to kick off on July 14th. KFAI's Nick Cooey sat down to talk with series curator Joe Ellis about his own South Minneapolis roots, as well as his commitment to amplifying the voices of his community.
It's our greater myth. It's us evolving as storytellers, creating works from this greater energy.
The voice you're hearing belongs to Joe Ellis. That greater energy he's talking about, it's drawn from a wholly unique synergy of creative expression governed by a singular passion for street art. Before he discovered street art, Joe found the first traces of that same mythic rawness in hip-hop and rap. Growing up in South Minneapolis, Joe vividly recalls his first exposure to the music that would lead to a lifelong obsession with rebellious, free-flowing art.
I picked up two albums. One of the albums is Black Star by Mos Def and Talib Kweli. I put it in the CD player because that's what we had at the time, you know, the little Discmans that you would walk around with, and I hit play on Black Star and it changed my life.
Hiding like thieves in the night from life, illusions of oasis making you look twice. Hiding like thieves in the night from life, illusions of oasis making you look twice. I'm
sure that everybody. As a teenager, Joe began drawing larger connections between the contemporary artists he was following and the 20th century wordsmiths he was discovering. By forging parallels between rap and the Harlem Renaissance, Joe uncovered what he would call a rhythmic way of creative expression. But Joe found the manifestation of this ideal in his own backyard, scrawled in the vibrant murals hidden beneath the bridges of Uptown.
The tracks from Minnehaha to the lake were like the highlight gallery. From 1994 to like 98, they have a competition to who can do the most pieces underneath on the bridges. And so this creative explosion happens like below everybody where nobody even knows it, but it's like this whole gallery of artists communicating with one another.
As a young adult, Joe first enrolled at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design before transferring to the School of Visual Design in New York City. Joe never stopped working and leapt at the first opportunity to immerse himself in the art world upon earning his degree. In early 2016, Joe returned to the Twin Cities with his wife to care for his ailing mother. In the wake of his mother's passing, Joe was left wondering what lay ahead for his future.
And I would say for the first sort of couple years coming out of that, it was just like a dream. What am I doing? Where am I? Where do I belong?
As fate would have it, Joe found the answer to those questions by a chance bike ride with his friend and mentor, Morgan Lazier.
At first, she's just sort of telling me, hey, I got this show that we're putting together. We want artists to make paintings in the neighborhood. Come check it out. So after a bike ride, she brings me over. We see it, and it's like Black Days was painting on the back of Pizza Luce on Lindale. It's like, cool. This is cool.
Morgan took Joe back to see more street artists the following year. Then, the year after that, on a trip to Miami, Joe was taking a tour of art fairs with a friend, explaining the connective threads between each artist whose work they saw when he had a revelation.
And it was like, hey, this is my superpower. I've spent so many hours looking at painting, so many hours talking about graffiti, so many hours listening to rap, so many hours at the museum, that I can start to sort it a little bit. And I can feel what's really the strongest, what's really working together, what's having a conversation. And that was a huge catalyst for me. That was like an epiphany.
Joe's decisions as a curator and gallerist have amplified conversations between artists and their communities. This dynamic has been crucial in an era when George Floyd's murder made Minneapolis, in Joe's words, a flashpoint for the world.
When George was murdered, the response that we saw was Lake Street was covered with painting. It was boarded up, and it was covered with paintings. Some of them were beautiful, some of them were ugly, some of them just said, "We live upstairs." But there was a creative expression that exploded in the city at the same time that everything got lit on fire.
In 2022, Joe worked with members of the community on the inaugural...
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.